The Zen Manifesto, Freedom from Oneself, Number 5. An Osho talk given spontaneously at an outdoor meeting to an international audience of thousands of people. Once, Hotetsu, a disciple of Matsu, and Tanka Tenen, were on a Zen tour, visiting various Zen masters to ask questions. One day, Hotetsu saw fish in a pond and motioned to them with his hand. Tanka said, "Tenen." The following day, Hotetsu asked Tanka, "What is the meaning of what you said yesterday?" Tanka threw his body to the ground and lay there, face down. On his last day, Tanka said to his disciples, "Prepare a bath for me. I am now going." Then he put on his straw hat, held a stick in his hand, put on his sandals, and took a step forward. But before his foot touched the ground, he had died.
Friends, first few questions. Somebody has asked, "I heard you say that we sometimes carry other people's wounds. What does this mean? Is another person's wound simply their thought pattern that we adopt? If we can so easily accept someone else's wound, then why is it so difficult to accept our own Buddhahood? It is a very complicated question, but if you are ready to understand, I am willing to answer. Everybody is carrying other people's wounds. In the first place, because you are living in a sick society where people are angry, full of hate, enjoy to hurt, that is the superficial level which can be understood easily. But there are subtle labels. There are so-called religious saints who are creating feelings of guilt in you, who are condemning you to be a sinner. They are giving you an idea which will create misery around you. And the older the idea is, people accept it more easily. When everybody around the world is saying that we are living in sin, all these people cannot be wrong. I am alone in declaring to you that you have chosen to live in misery. It is your choice. You can drop it immediately and dance in joy, in blissfulness. But the wound is deep. And one becomes very much familiar with one's misery. One clings to it as if it gives you a certain coziness, but it only gives you a hell of life. But your hell is supported by everybody. If you are miserable, everybody is sympathetic to you. Have you ever gone into the matter? When you are miserable, those who are sympathetic to you are nursing your misery. Have you ever seen anybody sympathetic to you when you are dancing with joy? When you are blissful, people are jealous, not sympathetic. According to me, the whole foundation of life has to be changed. People should be sympathetic only when there is pleasure and joy and rejoicing. Because by your sympathy you are nursing. Nourish people's joy. Don't nourish their sadness and their misery. Be compassionate when they are miserable. Make it clear that this misery is chosen by yourself. And on a more deeper level, perhaps the questioner has not asked me to go that deep. But the answer will remain incomplete if I don't go deep enough. The very idea of reincarnation, which has arisen in all the Eastern religions, that the self goes on moving from one body to another body, from one life to another life, and it does not exist in all the religions that have arisen out of Judaism, Christianity and Mohammedanism. And now even psychiatrists are finding that it seems true. People can remember their past lives. The idea of reincarnation is gaining ground. But I want you to say one thing. The whole idea of reincarnation is a misconception. It is true that when a person dies, his being becomes part of the whole. Whether he was a sinner or a saint does not matter. But he had also something called the mind, the memory. It was not available in the past to explain memory as a bundle of thoughts and vibes and waves, but now it is easier. And that's where on many points I find how Gautam Buddha, far ahead of his times, he is the only man who will agree with my explanation. He has given hints, but he could not group, prove any evidence for it. There was nothing available to say. He has said that when a person dies, his memory travels into a new womb, not the self. And we now can understand it, that when you are dying, you will be living all around memories in the air. And if you have been miserable, all your miseries will find some location. They will enter into some other memory system. Either they will enter totally into a single womb. That's how somebody remembers one's past. It is not your past. It was somebody else's mind that you have inherited. Most people don't remember because they have not got the whole lump, the whole heritage of a single individual's memory system. They may have got fragments from here and there, and those fragments create your misery system. All those people who have died on the earth have died in misery. Very few people have died in joy. Very few people have died with the realization of no mind. They don't leave a trace behind. They don't burden anybody else with their memory. They simply disperse into the universe. They don't have any mind and they don't have any memory system. They have already dissolved it in their meditations. That's why the enlightened person is never born. But the unenlightened people go on throwing with every death all kinds of misery patterns. Just as riches attract more riches, misery attracts more misery. If you are miserable, then from miles misery will travel to you. You are the right vehicle. And this is a very invisible phenomenon, like radio waves. They are traveling around you. You don't hear them. Once you have the right instrument to receive them, immediately they become available. Even before the radio was there, they were traveling by your side. There is no incarnation, but misery incarnates. Wounds of millions of people are moving around you just in search of somebody who is willing to be miserable. Of course, the blissful does not leave any trace. The man of awakening dies the way a bird moves into the sky without making a track or a path. The sky remains empty. Blissfulness moves without making any trace. That's why you don't get any inheritance from the Buddhas. They simply disappear. And all kinds of idiots and retarded people go on reincarnating in their memories. And it becomes every day thicker and thicker. Today, perhaps, it has come to a point to be understood and to be dissolved, otherwise it is too thick to allow you to live, to allow you to laugh. Your own consciousness know has no wounds. Your own consciousness knows nothing of misery. Your own consciousness is innocent, utterly blissful. To bring you in touch with your own consciousness every effort is being made to detract you from the mind. The mind contains all your misery, all your wounds. And it goes on creating wounds in such a way that unless you are aware, you will not even find how it creates. Just today, Ananda told me, Zareen used to be very happy when she used to come to the ashram from her house. Seeing the beauty and the freedom and the joy of the commune, she finally moved, took a revolutionary step in her life, left the home, became part of the commune. But since then, she has not been seen so joyous. I said, Ananda, tell Zareen clearly what has happened. If you are aware, you will understand very clearly. She used to come to the commune from the house which was dark and dismal and miserable in a free open sky. It was a joy. But since she moved to the commune, deep inside the mind made the commune her house. And all the misery of her house has started erupting, and now she has nowhere to go. Once she understands it, that the misery is created by a concept that she has carried. Although she has moved spaces, but she has not moved the concept. Once in a while the idea must be coming to her, it is better to go home. But it won't make any change. In the first place, the home will be more darker, more miserable, and the husband will look more a stranger than he has ever been. But one thing will be good, then she can come to the commune and be happy. But why not simply understand the point and be happy wherever you are? And going back to home is not just in your hands. As far as I know, your husband is not going to accept you back. He has told it to a sannyasi. Don't keep the past burdening you. You have come into an open space. Now learn the ways of freedom and love and friendliness And you have all the capacity. And there is no question of being miserable for any reason. No reason is valid to make anyone miserable. In fact, we have to search for a valid reason to be miserable. Otherwise, people will ask, "Are you mad?" without any reason, and you are miserable. So somehow you go on inventing reasons, but remember, those are only invented reasons. Nobody asks you, when you are happy, why are you happy? There is no reason to be happy. Happiness is our nature. To be joyful needs no reason, no cause. This commune has to be a commune of understanding, awareness, looking into one's own mind patterns and remembering that they are not yours. You are simply the watcher, and the watcher is outside the mind. I teach you the watcher. The only way to get out of misery patterns, whether ancient or new, witnessing is the only way. I say the only way because nobody has escaped from the mind without becoming a witness. Just witness, and suddenly you will start laughing at your own misery. All our miseries are so superficial, and most fundamentally, they are all borrowed. And everybody is giving his misery to everybody else he comes in contact. People are talking continuously about their miseries, about their troubles, about their conflicts. Have you ever heard anybody talking about his joyous moments, about his dances and songs, about his silences and blissfulness? No, nobody talks about these things. People go on sharing all their wounds. And whenever you are talking about your misery to somebody, without your knowing, you are transferring a miserable pattern. And the person may be thinking that he is only listening to you, but he is also catching the vibe of misery, the wounds. When I said that you carry other people's wounds. My statement meant that your own consciousness has no wounds. If everybody becomes alert, meditative, there will be no wounds in the world. They will simply disappear. They will not find any house, any shelter. This is possible. If it is possible to me, it is possible to everybody. And in your question, you also ask that why can we so easily accept someone else's wound, and why is it so difficult to accept our own Buddha wound? You can accept somebody's wounds because you have also wounds, you understand the language of wounds, miseries, sufferings. And you say, why we cannot accept the idea of being a Buddha? In the first place, you rarely come across a Buddha. Very rarely a Buddha exists in the world. So even if you meet him, you will not understand his language. Most probably you will misunderstand him. You know misery and he is talking about bliss. You know wounds and he is talking about eternal health. You know only death and he is talking about eternity. In the first place, it is difficult to find a Buddha. In the second place, it is difficult to understand his language. Because it is not your language. Otherwise, this must be the simplest thing in the world to understand one's Buddhahood. It is so obvious. Your very being is already a Buddha, but you have forgotten the path to your inner being. You have traveled long on many paths, but they all lead outside. And slowly, slowly, you have forgotten that there is a small space within you which you have not explored. Meditation is nothing but an exploration of your ignored inner space. That small space will suddenly remind you, you are a Buddha. And unless it becomes a mindfulness in you that you are a Buddha, it is not a concept. Nobody can convince you that you are a Buddha. You cannot be otherwise if you simply go in. The very experience of the interior space explodes in the recognition and remembrance of your Buddhahood. It is not a philosophy. It is an existential experience. The second question, what is the relationship between Zorba and Zen? The whole past of humanity has tried to keep them separate. And this has been an unfortunate experiment. The Zorba has remained incomplete, just superficial. And the Zen has remained incomplete, it has only the inner world and the outer is missing. My manifesto of Zen is that Zorba and Zen are not antagonistic to each other. The Zorba can melt into Zen, and only then both will be complete. The man who has lived outside has lived very superficially. And the man who does not know anything about the inner knows nothing about the existential, of the eternal. And the other hand, the man who knows something of the inner starts thinking that the outer is illusory. Nothing is illusory. The outer and the inner are part of one existence. I want Zorbas to be Buddhas and vice versa. And unless this becomes possible, there will not be many Buddhas and there will not be many Zorbas either. In the completion of Zorba and Zen, a tremendous quality comes to your life. You realize every moment of the outside world, every flower of the outside world, and you relish simultaneously the inner freedom, the inner joy, the inner drunkenness. There is no question of any division. But humanity has lived in a divided way, and that has been a catastrophe. It is time, Zorba starts meditating, and it is time the people who are meditators don't allow themselves to escape from the world. They have to come to the world with all their juice, with all their ecstasy, to share. It seems very difficult to understand, because the whole tradition of the world goes against it. But I don't see any difficulty. In myself, I have joined Zorba and Zen together, hence I don't see any difficulty. I am in the world, and yet I am not of the world. I rejoice the birds, the flowers, the trees. I rejoice myself in my silence. And I don't see there is any difference. The inner and the outer slowly have become melted into one whole. And unless your inner and outer become one whole, you will remain incomplete. And incompletion is misery. Only in completion there is bliss. Only in completion you have come home. You have come to existence without any conflict, in tremendous at ease, relaxed. The Zorba in the past has been tense and worried that perhaps he is not the right person. And the man of Zen has been with the tension that he has to avoid this, he has to avoid that, that he has to become a recluse far away in the mountains. But the very fear of the world shows your misunderstanding. The world has not to be feared. It has to be loved. We are the world. There is no question of escaping from anything. Every moment, everything has to be enjoyed without any guilt, without any inhibition. But all the religions had been against it. I proclaim with this manifesto a totally new sky for religious consciousness, the sky of completion, the joining of the inner and the outer, of the material and the spiritual, of Zorba and the Buddha. The third question, I understand from listening to you that although Mahavira and Buddha were enlightened, they still retained something of their former Hindu conditioning, which colored their expression of truth. In the therapies here, through your discourses, are you cleansing our minds from all conditioning so that we emerge as Buddhas who are absolutely free of conditionings? It is unfortunate, but it is true, that even a Buddha or a Mahavira remains within the conditioning of their social structure. That is a flaw in their enlightenment. It is not as higher as it can be. Some weights go on dragging them down. My effort here is to destroy all conditioning, Hindu, Mohammedan, Christian, Jewish. It does not matter what kind of conditioning you are carrying, I want you to drop it. It is a weight. And through all the therapies, I am trying to do something else, which the West has not understood yet. Through therapies, they try to bring you to normal humanity, their psychoanalysis brings people to what they call sanity. My therapies here and all psychoanalytic methods used have a different purpose. It is not to bring you to the normal, average, so-called sane people. It is to cleanse you of all traps, all theories, all religions, all kinds of conditionings. All these therapies here are deprogramming and leaving you free without any program. The negative part is being done by the therapies. They destroy your programming, and the positive part is done by meditation. As your minds are deprogrammed, there is a danger, because you have become accustomed to live according to a pattern, a lifestyle. If it is taken away, you will immediately jump into another lifestyle, into another prison. You cannot live alone. Therapies are doing the negative part, and meditation is giving you the joy of living in freedom, the joy of living in awareness, not according to any scripture and not according to anybody, but according to your own light. The day you start living according to your own light, your Buddhahood is far more complete than even Gautam Buddha's. He is a good pioneer. He started a process, but in the beginning perhaps it was impossible to do it completely. After 25 centuries it is possible now to complete the process of Gautam Buddha and create not Buddhas as against Zorbas, but transform the Zorba into a Buddha. Make the Zorba the foundation of the temple of the Buddha. Man is not to be divided, and man has to be given total freedom of being himself. And this is possible only that first therapies cleanse you of all the garbage that society has forced upon you, and meditation takes you inwards, that you don't have to look into any scripture for guidance. The scripture is within you, and you don't have to borrow light. The light is burning always inside you, the inner flame. Once you have found your inner flame, you have found the whole universe in its completion. You are the complete man. The new man has to be the complete man. A little biographical note. When Tanaka was 80, he went to Mount Tanaka and made a hut, which attracted hundreds of seekers. Within 3 years, a big monastery had grown. The Sutra. Once Hotesu, a disciple of Matazu, and Tanaka Tenen were on the Zen tour visiting various Zen masters to ask questions. It is part of the Zen world that even masters go on traveling to different monasteries and to ask questions. Questions are asked all over the world, but not the way it is being done in Zen. Masters who have arrived, who know the answer, just playfully go on traveling from monastery to monastery to ask questions to see whether this master is just a pretender. And out of their questions, a whole beautiful tradition has arisen. Masters pulling each other's legs, and after finding that both know it, rejoicing in it like children, dancing on the beach. Hotesu, a disciple of Matazu, and Tanaka Tenen were on such a tour to ask Zen masters questions, and both were already enlightened. One day Hotesu saw fish in a pond and motioned to them with his hands. Tanaka said, "Tenen, the word Tenen has been given to Tanaka because he was one of the most natural, simple, innocent persons. When Hotesu saw fish in a pond and motioned to them with his hand, Tanaka simply said, "Tenen." It is natural. Don't feel embarrassed. A great Buddha playing with the fish. Don't be worried. Tanka said, it is natural. The following day, Hotesu asked Tanka, what is the meaning of what you said yesterday? Tanka threw his body down to the ground and lay there face down. What he is saying, a fish is born out of the water, lives in the water, disappears in the water. It is natural. And now if you ask me again, what is the meaning of what you said yesterday? Zen masters are not recorded to repeat their answers. They respond. Tanka threw his body to the ground and lay there face down. He is saying, I am also a fish made of the earth, and one day I will disappear into the earth. I am not anything special than a fish. On his last day, Tanka said to his disciples, prepare a bath for me. I am now going. Then he put on his straw hat, held a stick in his hand, and put on his sandals, and took a step forward, but before his foot touched the ground, he had died. What a way of dying! With such clarity that the death is coming, be prepared for a journey. And the people who saw him standing one foot up could not see that that foot is indicating towards the invisible. It has left the body and the consciousness has become part of the cosmos. But a man of meditation becomes aware when the time is ripe to leave the body, or when the body is trying to get rid of his consciousness. A Zen man dies consciously, hence his death is not a death but an entry into immortality. And Tanka Tenen would be the right figure with his straw hat on, holding his stick in his hand, putting on his sandals, and taking a step forward, but before his foot touched the ground, he has died. standing, ready for the eternal journey. This shows an intense awareness of one's being, and it also shows that the man is free of the mind. Only a man free of mind has the clarity to see things as they are going to happen. And he is always ready, even for death. Most of the people are found not ready for death. If you ask them, "Are you ready for death?" they will say, "Wait, there are so many things to do." Only a man of meditation is always ready. He has done everything in each moment with such totality, with such completion, that he will not ask death to wait. Tanaka ordered his disciples to prepare for a bath. They had no idea that why he is asking for a bath. They had no idea why he is putting on his extra hat. Where is he going? He did not say anything. The only thing he said was, "Prepare a bath for me. I'm now going." Going where? Going into nowhere. Going into cosmos. Enough I have lived in the body. Now I am going to dissolve like ice dissolves in the ocean. A beautiful way of dying. Zen is both a beautiful way of living and a beautiful way of dying. A haiku. Autumn wind, the strength of the lotus in a single flower. There is a strong autumn wind, but that does not make the lotus flower freak out. Although its strength is very fragile, the strength of the lotus in a single flower, a small stem, so is life. Any moment, the strong autumn wind and the lotus flower is gone. But go the way the lotus flower goes, without any misery, without any fear, without any concern. Existence is our home. Whether we are in the body or not in the body, it does not matter. In fact, not to be in the body gives you a tremendous space. You are everywhere. Once you used to be somewhere, now if you ask about tenants, address, it will be care of nowhere, or care of everywhere. Both mean the same thing. But he died so naturally, just as he has lived. A question from Manisa. If I understand him rightly, Ubair Bunwa seems to think that one does not need a master to learn how to let go. He writes, I have need of a master to learn some movements that I wish to make with my limbs, but I have no need to learn how to decontract my muscles. I have need of a professor of philosophy or of poetry in order to learn how to think in the truest or most beautiful way. I have no need of such a person if I wish to learn not to think. Would you please comment? The content of Ubair Bunwa's statement is absolutely true. But in practice, it does not happen so. It is true that if you want to learn philosophy, you need a professor. If you don't want to learn, you don't need a professor. He has forgotten one thing, and that is you have already learned a philosophy. Now what to do with that philosophy? You will need a professor to help you to get rid of that philosophy. In practice, nobody is unconditioned. Hence, somebody is needed to indicate that your mind is conditioned, and a conditioned mind cannot know the truth. So in content, he is right, but in practice, he is just philosophizing. He understands Zen intellectually, and perhaps he has written the most complete treatise on Zen. But what he is writing, he himself has not practiced. The practice is a totally different phenomena than learning. You will have to be told how to relax. Although you don't need, but if you don't need, according to this man who has written on Zen extensively, if nobody needs to relax, if nobody needs to be told to relax, why people are tense? If nobody needs to be told to unlearn, then why there are not innocent people? In practice, things take a totally different standpoint. I will agree with him philosophically, but I know practically you have to be told how to relax. You have to be told how to unlearn. You need a master. In reality, there is no need, because you are the Buddha. But who is going to remind you? You have forgotten it so long that you have become accustomed with the idea that you are not the Buddha. Even beautiful things can be said, but only with intellectual understanding. It is not Uber Bunva's experience. His intellectual grasp is clear, but his existential experience is missing. Now it is time for Sardar Gurudev's. After so much philosophy, one needs to laugh. It is a bright Monday morning in downtown Santa Banana, California, getting ready for his first patient to arrive in the neo specialist in super surgery, Dr. Decapitated. Doctor looks around at his modern high tech computerized chromium plated office, pushes a button, and in walks his first patient, Porky Poke. Doc cries, Porky, his head wrapped in bandages, "Ah, don't tell me," shouts doctor, "it is your head." "That is fantastic," cries Porky. "How did you know?" "I could tell immediately," replies doctor. "Decapitate. I have been in this business for 30 years. Then the doctor fiddles with some switches and buttons on his computer and cries, "There is no doubt about it. You have a splitting migraine headache." "That is incredible," says Porky. "I have had all my life. Can you cure me?" "Okay," says Decapitate, consulting his computer screen. "This may sound a little drastic, but there is only one way I can help. I will have to remove your left testicle." "My God! My left ball!" cries Porky. "Well, okay. I will do anything to stop this headache." So 1 week later, Porky Poke waddles out of Decapitate's private surgery, missing his left nut, but feeling like a new man. "It is gone," cries Porky, trying to dance, but finding his movements painfully restricted. "My migraine is gone." To celebrate the occasion, Porky goes directly to Moise Finkelstein's tailoring boutique to get a whole new wardrobe of clothes. Moise takes one look at Porky and says, "You must be a size 42 jacket." "That's right," exclaims Porky. "How did you know?" "I could tell immediately," replied Moise. "I have been in this business for 30 years. "And you wear a size 36 pants with a 34-inch leg. Amazing," shouts Porky. "That is incredible. You are absolutely right." "Of course I am right," replies Moise. "And I have been doing this all my life. And you take a size 9.5 shoe." "Unbelievable," cries Porky. "That is exactly right." "And," says Moise, "you wear a size 4 underwear." "No," replies Porky. "You are wrong. It is not possible," snaps Moise, taking a closer look. "You wear a size 4 underwear." "I know." "I don't," says Porky. "All my life I have worn size 3. "Okay," says Moise. "You can wear a size 3, but it is going to give you a terrible migraine." One afternoon, on the little Greek island of Crete, Bishop Cretin is visiting old Mrs. Metaxa, his last remaining church member. "Ah, dear, cries old lady Mekstaksa, fanning herself and feeling faint, "I am so worried, Your Holiness. All our congregation are gone. There is only me and you left. What are we going to do?" "Don't worry, my child," replies Cretin, pouring the old lady a cup of tea. "Nothing can happen to us. God is taking care." Just then there is a smell of smoke in the room, and a voice from downstairs cries, "Fire! Fire! Everyone run your lives!" Freaked out, the bishop and old Mrs. Mekstaksa get up and run for the window. As huge flames suddenly engulf the apartment, they get out on the window ledge, 10 stories up, and hang there by their fingertips, calling for help. At that moment, old Saint Plato, the Greek Orthodox angel, appears before the two good Christians, dangling in the air. As the flames burn closer, "I can help you out of your trouble," announces the ancient angel. "I can grant you one wish each. You can choose whatever you would like to be." Immediately, Mrs. Mekstaksa cries out, I wish I was relaxing peacefully at the Church of the Blessed Bleeding Virgin." "Okay," says old Saint Plato, shaking his head, "if that is what you want," and poof, a new gravestone appears in the churchyard, inscribed, "Rest in peace, Mrs. Mekstaksa." Then Saint Plato turns to Bishop Cretin, "And what about you, Bishop? Where would you like to be?" Just at that moment, a bird flies over and shoots right in Bishop Cretin's eye. "Ah," cries Cretin, "bloody hell!" One afternoon, in the Sally Superstein sales room of Salami Sandwiches, the phone rings. "This is Sally," says Sally, as he picks up the phone. "Hello," says the voice on the other end. "Is that you, Sally?" "Yes," says Sally. "This is Sally." "It does not sound like Sally," says the other voice. "Well," replies Sally, "this is me." "All right, Sally Superstein here." "Are you sure you are Sally?" says the voice. "Sure, I am sure," replies Sally, looking in the mirror. "It is me. This is Sally." Says the voice, "I want to speak to Sally, Sally Superstein, please." "Hey," cries Sally, "it is me, you idiot. This is Sally." "Really?" asks the voice, "is this really Sally?" "Yes," cries Sally, "this is Sally." "Well, listen, Sally," says the other voice, This is Moise. Lend me $100, will you? Okay, says Sally. I will tell Sally when he comes in. Be silent. Close your eyes and feel your bodies to be completely frozen. This is the right moment to enter inwards. Gather all your energies . Gather all your consciousness and rush towards the center of your being, which is just 2 inches below your navel, inside your body. With an urgency, as if this may be the last moment of your life, deeper and deeper, faster and faster. As you are coming closer to the center of your being, a great silence will descend over you. And a great light just like a flame will arise from the very center of your being. This flame, this fire is your eternal nature. This is your original face. The only thing that needs to go deeper and deeper into the center is witnessing. Witness, you are not the body. witness, you are not the mind. Witness, you are only a witness, a pure awareness, symbolized by Gautam Buddha. This moment, you are the Buddha. Next moment, it depends on your remembrance. You can remember and never forget it. It is up to you to live a miserable life of the mind or to live a blissful, peaceful, rejoicing of no mind. Witnessing is the secret. Make it deeper. Nivedana, relax and just disappear. This moment you are melting. And Gautam the Buddha auditorium is becoming an ocean, a pure consciousness. This is the art of both life and death. If you can live with this consciousness, your whole life will become a path of roses. And your death will be the crescendo of your dance. Sadness, misery are men manufactured. Bliss, joy are your natural potentialities. Meditation is just to know your potential. Before Nivedana calls you back, gather all the light, all the joy, all the peace, all the silence, the whole truth of this moment, and persuade the Buddha, the flame, to follow you. It will come along. It has to come. It is your very nature. These are the three steps. First, the Buddha, the flame of light, follows you like a shadow. Second step, the flame is ahead of you. You become a shadow. And the third step, even your shadow disappears, only the flame of awareness remains. Gautam Buddha is simply a symbol, a metaphor. Nivedana, come back, but come with grace and peace and silence, and for few seconds sit just to remind where you have been, what is space you have entered in, and feel the flame behind you, the warmth, the love, the compassion. The Buddha is standing behind you. The day is not far away when you will be standing behind the Buddha. And once you are behind the Buddha, just a shadow, it does not take much time for the shadow to disappear and become part of the Buddha. The Buddha is only a symbol of pure awareness. Don't take it literally. This awareness, this silence, this peace makes you the most blessed people on the earth at this moment. You can remain 24 hours in this blissfulness. It is up to you. Don't get into old patterns of misery. It takes a little while to get rid of them. But once you have some inner light within you, they start disappearing on their own. Except meditation, there is no other religion.
Thank you.